Today on Maine Calling, what to know about Parkinson's disease, which is on the rise in our country. It's estimated that more than a million people in America have Parkinson's disease. It is the second most common neurodegenerative disease after Alzheimer's. In recent years, the number of cases of people with Parkinson's disease has been increasing dramatically. Why? The symptoms can mimic other diseases. How does one know it's Parkinson's? And how effective are current treatments? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we get up to date on Parkinson's disease, and we meet some Mainers living with it. We'll learn about deep brain stimulation and other treatments, and find out what kind of services are available for patients and their families. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Parkinson's disease is known for certain symptoms, such as tremors, but it does affect people in different ways. We'll learn more about this neurological condition and about treatment and support. My guest today, Dr. Sarah Dodwell, who is a neurologist and movement disorder specialist with Maine Health. Nancy Nealon, Education and Outreach Director, Northeast, with the Parkinson's Foundation. And Joan Emerson. She was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease 17 years ago and has started a support group for people affected by Parkinson's disease. We'd invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about Parkinson's disease? What do you want to share about your experience? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post on Facebook or Instagram, or, of course, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you and welcome to all of you. I'll start with you, Nancy. Can you talk to us about how prevalent Parkinson's disease is? It seems to me I have found out about more people in my life who have Parkinson's in the last 5 years than ever before.
So true. I hear that all the time. Very rare for me to meet someone not here. Oh, my aunt has Parkinson's and so on. What the Parkinson's Foundation recently did was conduct a study, because earlier estimates was about 60,000 people per year were diagnosed. But what the study found and what we now widely tell people, it's not 60,000 people, it's 90,000 people each year are newly diagnosed. So second only to Alzheimer's. This is, you know, certainly a profound disease that we have to do so much for. So prevalence is very much a concern.
Is it likely that the numbers are, Nancy, even higher and that it doesn't get diagnosed or reported?
Well, I suspect Dr. Dodwell might have some thoughts on this as well. Certainly the age wave has something to do with this, as we are all aging and baby boomers are entering their 60s, 70s, and beyond. I once met a gentleman who was 93 years old when he was diagnosed, which is obviously an outlier, but the far majority of people are diagnosed in their 60s and 70s. So perhaps it's a combination of more awareness. We have fabulous movement disorder specialists like Dr. Dodwell at Maine Health. Much has been done to promote and raise awareness of Parkinson's disease.
All right. Well, I will turn to you, Dr. Dodwell. What do we know? Do we believe that it's underdiagnosed?
So it is hard. It's hard to know if something is underdiagnosed. But my suspicion is that eventually everyone does get counted. So Parkinson's disease is a very slowly developing, slowly progressive disease. So at some point, you know, people do get diagnosed. But I think it is true, it can be kind of a delayed diagnosis. So I'd say on average, it can sometimes take a year or two, I'd say for most people, to get diagnosed because it's slowly progressive. And a lot of people think, oh, this is just the aging process. I'm just getting older. I'd say it's pretty common to have it diagnosed maybe a year or two after symptoms started. But there are cases where it goes on even longer than that, and that, can be unfortunate because it really starts to impact people's function. So, we would definitely like people to be aware of the typical symptoms so we can get them on treatment sooner.
Well, speaking of, what are the typical symptoms, and how is it that people confuse this with what they think of as typical signs of aging?
So I think the easy part of Parkinson's is the tremor. So I think when people develop a tremor on one side of their body, that is kind of an easy clue. And most people kind of associate Parkinson's with tremor. So when they have a tremor that's mostly there when they're just at rest, so their hand's just in their lap and it's on one side, that is very characteristic of Parkinson's disease. But about 30% of patients don't have that as their first symptom or even in the first few years. So in those cases, it is a little trickier. And those patients may notice that their walking is different. They're having trouble getting out of a chair, getting on clothes, putting on their seatbelt, getting money out of a wallet. Sort of these kind of fine motor and gross motor tasks just get kind of a little harder. And that's, I think, where people can think like, oh, is this just normal aging?
And Joan, you are one of the patients for whom Parkinson's disease does not look like it does for the majority of people. Tell us your story.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't have the tremor that most people have. I have what is an internal tremor. Like I would say, oh, I'm having one of those really shaky inside today. My whole body felt like it was moving, but there was nothing anyone could see. So it's a non-dominant tremor that I have. The process of being diagnosed, though, I just wanted to go back to that for a second. I think the younger people are, longer it's going to take them to be diagnosed. Number one, they're not going to go to the doctor probably when they feel something. And number two, being young, they don't think about things like Parkinson's. I was 53 when I was diagnosed, but I know that I walked around for several years before I went to the doctor for it. So I think that the numbers of young people being diagnosed has probably gone up lately versus, not just the older people.
When you say that you feel the shaking on the inside, maybe that's as well as you can describe it, but can you tell us more about what that feels like?
Well, imagine somebody picking you up and shaking you. Your insides feel like they're moving, but your outside stays rigid. That's what it feels like.
And Sarah is Dr. Dodwell is Parkinson's like so many other things that the earlier someone is diagnosed, the more you can do to help them?
So unfortunately, we don't have what we call a disease-modifying treatment for Parkinson's. So it's not like catching a cancer as soon as possible that you want to like get on treatment. But it is important to be aware because exercise has a really big impact on disease progression. So that has been shown to slow progression in Parkinson's disease. So in that way, it is important for people to be aware so that they can get really serious about exercise if they're not already. But also, it's important for them to know that there is treatment available, symptomatic treatment. So it might not slow progression, but it can help them function well. And we know that if we start people on medication that allows them to stay active, they do better in the long run. So that is important to get it recognized.
And Joan, how has it affected your life?
Well, actually, I've been very lucky in that my Parkinson's has been very slow progression. But I have to agree with Dr. Dodwell that exercise is key because I exercised every day before I was diagnosed and continued to exercise after I was diagnosed. And I feel that strongly that that has made a big difference in my progression, to the point that that's what I always tell people at support group is exercise is medicine. If you keep pushing yourself, you keep using your body, you're going to be able to use it longer.
Dr. Dodwell, what do we know about what causes Parkinson's disease? A lot of attention this past spring on a study that showed that people who lived near golf courses had a higher likelihood of developing Parkinson's disease. Are pesticides the cause or one of the causes?
Yeah, like a number of diseases, it seems to be a combination of some genetic vulnerability plus some environmental factors. So there are some genes that have been associated with the diagnosis of Parkinson's and have an increased risk. We particularly see that in patients who are diagnosed younger, like in their 30s and 40s. They have a more likely to have a genetic mutation that can be identified. But we think for most people, there is some genetic predisposition. And then there's a lot of clues that there are environmental triggers. And one of them is pesticides. And that's been known for quite some time that there are certain pesticides that increase your risk of Parkinson's disease. I think I've seen an older study where it showed people who grew up downwind from farms that used pesticides as children and young adults had a higher risk of Parkinson's. So I think that newest study is kind of expanding on that risk. We also know that Agent Orange exposure increases your risk of Parkinson's disease pretty substantially. So I have a number of veterans that have Parkinson's disease. So there definitely looks to be a lot of environmental causes that we've found.
Nancy.
It seems like a great what Dr. Dodwell just shared. Parkinson's Foundation has launched, I should say, back end of 2019, and it is now a global research initiative. It's called PD Generation. And to date, nearly 25,000 people, that is 25,000 people diagnosed with Parkinson's, have participated in this research, and that is phenomenal. It continues to grow. So PD Generation is all about mapping the future of Parkinson's disease. Why is it that what we have found so far with this research, 12 to 13% of people with Parkinson's have a genetic variant. The rest do not. And anyone with Parkinson's can participate. In fact, we need more and more people to participate. By participating, this really empowers you and your care team with your genetic data. And it's something you can do at certain sites throughout the country, but you can also do it from the comfort of your home. There is no cost involved. If you do have the genetic form, then free genetic counseling is also provided to you. Because, of course, you can imagine people might have concerns about what does this mean for my family if I have the genetic form. And for most people, they do not. But for those who do, this will provide opportunities for them to participate in certain clinical trials. It's going to help us advance care throughout. And the more we know, obviously, getting to the root cause of why Parkinson's happens, be it the environmental triggers, the genetic factors, is so very important. And all anyone needs to do, if you have Parkinson's and you'd like to know more, you'd like to participate, is to simply call the Parkinson's Foundation helpline. And if I could, I'd love to offer that number. And I'll share it several times. From the alpha perspective, if you want to think about it, it's 1-800, the number 4, PD info. Numerically, it's 1-800-473-4636. Our helpline specialists are phenomenal. They are incredibly knowledgeable, compassionate. I think they responded to over 26,000 calls and emails last year. And they are the front line for us and will answer questions about area support groups like Jones, PBGene, where people can access resources, our programs. So I'd really encourage and urge actually anyone with Parkinson's, care partners, anyone, healthcare professionals, everybody uses our helpline. So 1-800-473-4636. And once again, be part of PDGeneration. If you have Parkinson's, this is a huge opportunity for you to contribute to research.
Great. And we'll also put that on our website and in the Maine Calling newsletter. Dr. Dodwell, there's so many advances in genetic testing. Is this something, Nancy was talking about, if you have Parkinson's disease, you can become involved in this study. What if you do not? Is this something that you can test for to see if you have this genetic variant?
There are, I couldn't even tell you how many genes have been associated with a risk of Parkinson's disease. I mean, it's at least 15, but I think it's much more. So it's a hard thing to test, to sort of cast a wide net and to try to look for your risk. It's honestly pretty low yield. If you don't have any symptoms, it would be pretty low yield to do something like that. I think there are sort of direct-to-consumer genetic testing that you can do, but I think that's really tricky because it doesn't come along with kind of the important genetic counseling, kind of to let people know what the meaning of it all is. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend people try to track down that kind of testing. I think it's just more important to modify the modifiable risk. So thinking about exercise and kind of healthy, managing your other health conditions.
We'll go to John, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, John, go ahead.
Good morning. I do have Parkinson's. I was diagnosed about 5 years ago. And I consider myself fortunate because so far the only effects are some arm and hand tremors and my voice. I go to a voice support group regularly, and when I look around the table at the other people who are there, I realize a lot of them are worse off than I am. But I also know that Parkinson's is progressive. And I struggle with, am I headed for the same place some of those folks that are a lot worse off than I am are? Is that where I'm going to end up? Do your guests have any suggestions for dealing with the psychological side of Parkinson's?
John, thank you so much for your call. I'm sure so many people share your question. I'll go to you first, Dr. Dodwell.
Yeah, I talk about that with patients a lot because there's so many ways that support groups are really crucial. Having a community is really crucial, but I do hear from some patients that the fact that they feel like they're looking into their future if they see patients that are more affected than themselves. And I just really try to reinforce from the very beginning when I diagnose people that everyone's Parkinson's disease is unique to them. There's an enormous variety in terms of the types of symptoms, the severity of symptoms that people experience. So even within the same family, if you had a grandfather with Parkinson's disease, your course won't look the same. So I think that really is, it's important to keep in mind. I know that's hard when you're kind of facing it, but that really is true. All of my patients are really, really different. I'm sure Joan would say the same thing.
I was going to ask Joan next, in the support group that she founded and runs, what would you say to John?
Well, I would tell him that if you know one person with Parkinson's, you know one person with Parkinson's. That's our line because no two people are going to have the same medications, have the same symptoms, have the same anything. There's such a huge number of things that can happen in your body that I couldn't even begin to count them all. There are so many. And so you can't treat it by looking at someone else and thinking you're going to have that same pattern. It's just not going to happen. And so you've got to just take your case, do the best you can for yourself, and your progression is going to be what it's going to be. But I do understand, especially with the young onsets, they come in and they see someone who's had it for a long time or has it more severely, and it's very hard for them, and they get very anxious about it. So I do understand the feelings, and we do talk about them because people need to get that out. They need to verbalize it, and support group is a great place for them to do that.
Well, we do have to take a quick break. Thank you, John, so much for your call, and good luck to you. We are talking about Parkinson's disease on Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about how Parkinson's disease affects patients and their families and what treating the disease can entail. Joining me this hour, Nancy Nealon with the Parkinson's Foundation. She is the Northeast Region Education and Outreach Director. Joan Emerson lives in Biddeford and has had Parkinson's disease for many years. She also runs a support group. And neurologist Dr. Sarah Dodwell with Maine Health. She is a movement disorder specialist. Join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before the break, Nancy, we heard from John, who is struggling with emotional and psychological nature of this and wondering about his future. And I had to go to a break, so we didn't get to hear from you what you would say to John. Go ahead.
Thank you. I think any of us, if we try and put ourselves in the shoes of someone with Parkinson's, you can only imagine the anxiety you might have about the future. And feeling depressed is certainly part and parcel of any chronic progressive disease. What I loved hearing John say is it sounds like he's involved in a program. It might not be Speak Out, but it sounds like he's involved in a voice program, which is great because one of the little known symptoms of Parkinson's is a soft voice. But support groups like Joan, and I love Joan saying, Joan, I will tell you that we must have ESP, because I will say every time I'm out there, if you've met one person with Parkinson's, you've met one person and one version of Parkinson's, because no two people experience the same. But I will also add that support groups, if that's not your thing, seeking mental health support is one of the healthiest things that you can do, be it a psychologist, a social worker. Call our helpline. We'll help you find those resources to help support you, help support perhaps a spouse, a care partner. You know, it's not just the person with Parkinson's. It's the entire family system that is impacted by this disease. So getting support is a huge, huge step forward. And I will also just add, we also, the Parkinson's Foundation also talks about, in addition to having phenomenal neurologic care like Dr. Dodwell provides, we also talk about building your team. You might not need every single clinician or person I'm about to mention, but somewhere along your journey, a physical therapist, occupational therapists are phenomenal when it comes to helping people managing symptoms, a social worker, of course, a speech language pathologist, dietitian, even your pharmacist can be part of your team. So having that support is really critical to living well with Parkinson's, and the Parkinson's Foundation and all the support and resources we provide.
Calling in now is Bo Norris, who helps care for his father who has Parkinson's disease, and he is co-founder of Maine Network Partners. Thanks so much for joining us, Bo.
Sure, happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your story and your father's story.
Yeah, so my father was diagnosed probably in 2010, and like Dr. Dodwell mentioned, he was probably symptomatic for several years before that. And one thing about my father, he was a retired CEO and, you know, kind of one of these go-get 'em guys. So he began researching pretty quickly what his options were. And he, kind of like John, he knew the trajectory of the disease. He knew there were, you know, some treatment options, you know, the standard protocol of getting dopamine as the disease progresses. And he is aware of all that, but he was really wondering what else was available. And there were
programs that he got involved in very early on, which I think made all the difference for him. One was the Parkinson Voice Project, and I think Nancy mentioned the Speak Out program. One of the things that my dad recognized is that, and one of his symptoms was his voice was starting to get soft. He was slurring, began to drool a little bit. And Parkinson's Voice Project is all about strengthening the swallowing mechanism and the vocal cords and articulation and facial expression, all those kind of symptomatic things around Parkinson's. And really, it's kind of got a twofold purpose. One is to strengthen the vocal cords and the swallowing mechanism, because one of the major reasons for death from Parkinson's is pneumonia, asphyxiation, so the ability to swallow. The second thing was really more of a social aspect. Parkinson's can be really isolating. You know, you spoke about some of the symptoms. My dad didn't have the tremors, but again, he had the voice issues and the drooling, and he was stooped over. And, you know, sometimes just kind of thinking about socializing when you feel like you're kind of a mess, that was a little bit of a tough thing. So being in a Speak Out program with other people who shared similar symptoms or different symptoms, there was a social aspect that was really, really motivating for him. So that was that was terrific. And he actually, he passed away in January of 2024. So he was living with the disease for almost 15 years. And I would say up until the last year, he was living a really vibrant, active life because of these therapies. The second one I'll mention briefly is the Rock Steady Boxing Program. And these are great programs. And I'll give you the websites for both of these programs. But he was a regular at any Rock Steady program he could be at, regardless of where he traveled. And there must be thousands of these programs all over the world. And he'd go three times a week. And it's really geared specifically for folks with neurological problems, but specifically Parkinson's patients. And again, it's that exercise thing that your panelists have been talking about that's so important. And so for my dad, ultimately, the headline for him is really he stayed as motivated as long as he could because of these particular programs. Mm. And Rocksteady is very inexpensive. Parkinson's Voice Project is absolutely free, and there's a huge amount of resources on their website. And it's really terrific for anybody who's been diagnosed to spend time exploring those two programs, because I think they made a huge difference for my dad.
Well, Bo, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about those. Sure. And we will provide information in our newsletter and on the website. Bo Norris has cared for his father, who had Parkinson's disease, and is co-founder of Maine Network Partners. On the line with us now is Megan Walton, who is executive director of Southern Maine Agency on Aging. Thanks for calling us, Megan. And I understand, well, we just heard about the Rock Steady Boxing Group and the Parkinson's Voice Project. What does your agency do, and what else do you want people to know about?
Jennifer, thanks so much for having me. And, you know, I'm so glad you're having today's show, because if we know one thing, it's that people are living so much longer than we ever did before. And so the prevalence of these conditions, whether it's Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, has gone up tremendously. And I just wanted to make sure folks know that, you know, when someone receives a Parkinson's disease diagnosis, it really is a family diagnosis. Right? It impacts the entire family, because everybody's trying to figure out, how do I navigate? What's the best way to support my loved one? How involved do I get or not? And so I just wanted people to know that Southern Maine Agency on Aging is here, and we have so many sources of support for family caregivers. So just as people are trying to navigate their options and understand what's available, think of their local agency on aging.
Well, thank you so much, Megan, for calling in and the work that you do. Megan Walton with Southern Maine Agency on Aging. One thing that struck me, Dr. Dodwell-Serra, is that when Bo was talking about his father, saying that his father had been a CEO, I also know of others who had high-powered jobs who had been diagnosed with Parkinson's and in some cases left that job because of stress. And I'm wondering if you can talk about how how much stress can affect someone once they've been diagnosed?
I think it's like most neurologic diseases, most chronic conditions. I think if you add in that day-to-day stress, that takes a toll. I frequently compare, talk about how each person has a certain amount of energy. And when Parkinson's disease, a lot of your energy is devoted to kind of overcoming those symptoms on a day-to-day basis. So activities that would have taken, very little energy, all of a sudden you're kind of having to put more mental focus and more physical focus into it. So when you have a really high stress job or high stress, family environment, that just takes a toll. I think some people continuing to work is actually a great thing. So we frequently encourage people to stay cognitively and socially engaged, and work can be really great for that. It gives you structure. So I think a lot of people's jobs are great for their Parkinson's. It allows them to really do well as long as they're still able to take good care of themselves. They still have time to exercise and do all those things. But I think some people with really high stress jobs who are working tons and tons of hours, they just don't have anything left to kind of care for themselves.
We'll go to Roy calling from Brunswick. Hi, Roy, go ahead.
Hi, I have two questions. One is whether there's any connection between diet and managing Parkinson's. And the other is, I read recently about a study done in Wuhan University clarifying the connection between proteins misshapen in the kidneys that then spread to the brain. Thank you.
Dr. Dodwell.
So I did a little talk on this last year. So I looked into the diet and Parkinson's a bit. And we don't have a lot of information about it right now. There's kind of limited data. But I think there's some really interesting starts to information as far as how your gut health impacts your brain health. So that kind of mind-brain connection, that gut-brain connection. So it does look like certain diets seem to be protective for folks. So in particular, kind of a Mediterranean-based diet seems to be protective and decreases your risk of Parkinson's disease. And I've seen some really preliminary studies showing that actually changing your diet once you have Parkinson's disease to be closer to a Mediterranean diet may actually improve your symptoms and your symptom control. So there is some suggestion of that. In terms of the protein, I'm not familiar with the research that was mentioned in terms of the kidney, but we do have a sense that this misfolded protein, so alpha-synuclein, is misfolded, turns into Lewy bodies in the brain. So that's the pathologic basis of Parkinson's disease. So that's first identified actually at the gut. So the nerves in the gut, you can actually find this misfolded protein in your intestines early on in Parkinson's disease. And the theory is that it actually travels up your nerves and into the brain. So that's kind of our leading thought in terms of the cause of Parkinson's at this point, that there is this misfolded protein that finally gets to the brain.
We'll go to Chet calling from South Portland. Hi, Chet. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Thank you for taking the call. I've been diagnosed maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. It's hard to say because this is, I wanted to underscore from a patient standpoint what an absolutely extremely frustrating and mysterious experience this is to have a disease that, nobody can exactly explain to you. If I've got 10 Parkinson's symptoms on this list in front of me, eight of them could be caused by something else, and you don't know where it's coming from next. But the flip side of that is that in regards to what John and others were saying, that you don't have to, it's not the end of your life. You can perform a lot of things for a long time, as Bill's father did, apparently. I have a friend, for example, who was a Secret Service agent, and he had the tremors, but he could still very effectively keep up his marksmanship. It's just an odd juxtaposition of you can do some things and not the other. I'm a jazz drummer, which is the epitome of multitasking in music, and I can do that fine, but the food falls off my fork these days. Then that's the experience. It's really weird. And the women you've been talking to today have very importantly, let me underline the importance of exercise and social connections. To add to the frustrations, you may have heard it in my voice, which you've heard before, that not all, even the tremors don't mean that you've got Parkinson's. So don't give up. And another resource I wanted to suggest was I'm a part of the global study from the Michael J. Fox Foundation, and they have a lot of resources at michaeljfox.org. So thanks for shining a light on this. The more people try to understand it, the closer we'll come to a solution.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Chet. And I noticed when you were talking about how frustrating and weird it is, Joan was nodding. Joan, you are in complete agreement with Chet, right?
Yes. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say that. They would say, I've been seeing doctors for years and they can't figure out what's wrong with me. There are some people that are diagnosed right away, and there are other people that it literally takes years to be diagnosed. You just, again, go back to that everybody's different. No two people are the same, and you have to go through what you have to go through to get there. Just recently, though, there is now the DAT test that I've never had, but that people can have, that is more conclusive. I don't think it's 100% conclusive. Dr. Dodwell can speak to that, but it gives people more of an idea whether they really have Parkinson's or not, or if, like he was saying, some of your symptoms are just old age. You're getting older, you're changing. It can be frustrating trying to figure out which ones are which.
Dr. Dodwell, what would you like to say about the DAT test?
So before that, I think the frustrating symptoms that a lot of people notice and are hard to explain are what we call the non-motor symptoms. So I think that's an important concept to talk about. So in Parkinson's disease, you have motor symptoms, which are the ones that everyone thinks of in terms of tremor and walking. And then we have non-motor symptoms. And we find that the non-motor symptoms can be there even a decade before the motor symptoms pop up. So those are really nonspecific. So they're things like constipation, insomnia, fatigue, depression, anxiety, some subtle memory changes. So those are the things that people can tell there's something different, something's happening, but they're so nonspecific that it's hard to kind of put the pieces together unless you know what you're looking for. And those are the symptoms that I think are really hard, really frustrating for patients. If they have a lot of those non-motor symptoms as part of their Parkinson's, those are really hard to manage. Those are hard to live with. In terms of the DAT scan, that's a nuclear medicine scan. It's essentially a CT scan, but they put an isotope into your bloodstream beforehand. And that can show us whether someone has a Parkinsonian disorder or not. I don't order it very often. It is to be diagnosed clinically, meaning by talking to someone and examining them, is actually very sensitive and specific. So we're actually pretty good at diagnosing Parkinson's disease. It's pretty reliable. But that is in kind of trickier cases when it's not very clear. That is a test that can be done. There's also a skin biopsy test that's more recently been available that can be done to kind of clear up that confusion. But there is still some interpretation. So I definitely wouldn't recommend like asking your primary care doctor to order a DAT scan. So it still should be done by a neurologist.
Got it. Well, we have so many calls and questions coming in. Chet, thank you so much for your call and good luck to you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about Parkinson's disease. Our guest today, Joan Emerson, who has Parkinson's disease and is helping others through a support group, Dr. Sarah Dodwell, who is with Maine Health, and Nancy Nealon with the Parkinson's Foundation for the Northeast region. If you're quick, you can share your comments and questions. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3567. 6666. Let's see, we'll go to this email from Polly. My husband had Parkinson's. He was not diagnosed until we moved to Maine and was diagnosed with Parkinson's mask. We'd never heard this term, so we were in denial for many months. He was athletic and walked a lot. Later, he had a fantastic therapist who got him walking even the day before he died. Exercise is important. So we're hearing that over and over again about the importance of exercise. Dr. Dodwell, though, tell me about Parkinson's mask.
So that refers to the fact that people with Parkinson's, usually one of the sooner symptoms, they have less facial expression. So sometimes we hear, a family member will say they look mad all the time. Like people think that it's a reflection of their internal state, but it's really just that they're not moving their face as much. So that tends to happen. People aren't blinking quite as much. So they can have some dry eyes. And that kind of goes along with the quieter voice. People notice their handwriting is getting smaller. So kind of everything gets sort of smaller and quieter.
We'll go to Kit, who's calling from Chamberlain. Hi, Kit. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. I'm just calling to tell you a little bit about my brother. He's 75 years old. He's had Parkinson's for 24 years. And we have a thread of Parkinson's in our family. Right now, it only affects the males, fortunately. But anyway, I just wanted to, everything I'm hearing is absolutely what is true with him as well. There are a couple of extra things I'd like to add. With respect to diet, we really believe that a non-inflammatory diet is really, really important, and that's an easy one to find online. But he does use hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and he really feels that that's important. His Parkinson's now is actually much more sort of on the cognitive side than on the physical, because he still does push-ups and stuff like that. I mean, from the very beginning, he really upped his physical game. And so he's quite strong and can run still, not long distances, but he can. And but cognitively, that's where it's beginning to affect him. So he does a lot of cognitive exercises. He does swallowing exercises because he actually had a choking episode recently. And choking is going to be a part of Parkinson's for a lot of people. But one thing that we all feel, he has four siblings, that really, really has impacted him is he never gave up hope. He was diagnosed when he was just a little over 50, and he said, I'm going to fight this, and there's going to be a cure, and he's never given up. So anyway, I just wanted to share those additional things about my brother.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much, Kit. Joan, what about this attitude of not giving up hope?
I agree 1,000%. I've told my story, which was trying to tell my father that I was diagnosed with Parkinson's was very hard for me. And I said to him, Dad, I'm going to end up in a wheelchair. And he said, no, you're not. And I believed him. And I fight every day so that that won't happen to me.
Good for you, Joan.
Kit, thank you. And Joan, thank you. Here we go. An email from Gail. My dear friend, who is like family, has had Parkinson's diagnosis for 12 years. He's 70. He's been on the, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, the levodopa carbidopa since the beginning. He has mood swings, anxiety, very disturbed sleep, short-term memory issues, and cognitive changes, like more and more difficulty driving and traveling due to navigational challenges and impulsivity. For instance, he started gambling and couldn't stop until the family intervened. It is a neurologic disorder with these less obvious impacts that are devastating to care partners who are family. He does have good days where he's more like his former self. The tremors and medication for those seem like the tip of the iceberg. I'm wondering, Dr. Dodwell, Sarah, would you like to address this?
Yeah, so that it sounds like he's having more of the non-motor symptoms, which are not addressed by that carbidopa levodopa, the medication we use to treat the motor symptoms of Parkinson's. And in fact, it can worsen. One of the side effects is impulsivity. So it can actually worsen some of those behavioral changes. I think most patients who are really bothered by Parkinson's, it tends to be those non-motor symptoms that are really difficult for them to manage.
We'll go to Ron calling from Hancock. Hi, Ron. Go ahead. Ron, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Go ahead.
I was told by a physician when I was concerned about minor tremors that the test for Lewy bodies, which someone alluded to about skin biopsy tests, is almost a 95% prediction of Parkinson's disease, even though particular symptoms cannot be diagnosed at the time.
Dr. Dodwell?
Yeah, I mean, in most cases, we can make a diagnosis through examining patients. So the Parkinson's tremor is very characteristic. So that can be diagnosed clinically in the clinic. And they actually have looked at how accurate clinical diagnosis is, and it can be in kind of the low 90s in terms of how reliable we are. But the skin biopsy is recently available, and it can tell you if you have any kind of disease related to Parkinson's disease. So there are other related disorders that would be positive if you had any of those disorders.
Ron, thank you for your call. Let's see, we'll move on to Wells and Mike. Hi, Mike, go ahead.
Hi. I'm 60 years old, and I've had Parkinson's for 20 years. And 3 years ago, I went down to Brigham and Women's in Boston and had an MRI-guided ultrasound versus doing the DBS where they do the incision to the top of your brain and run the cables down into your chest area. The MRI-guided ultrasound is non-invasive and worked to control the shaking on the right side of my body.
Oh, that's great. Is there anything you want to add to what Mike has said, Dr. Dodwell?
Yeah, so those are kind of more advanced treatments of Parkinson's disease. The first thing we do is start medication. And in patients who the medication works, but incompletely, we recommend some more invasive techniques. We usually start with deep brain stimulation surgery here. It has kind of a more durable benefit, so it lasts longer and we can adjust it as the disease progresses. It does involve a brain surgery and implanting this hardware, but it's a really excellent tool in terms of managing Parkinson's long term. The focused ultrasound is where they actually burn that same target that we target for deep brain stimulation. They actually kind of burn that area of the brain. In some cases, the symptoms can come back. So I think in some patients, it's an excellent option. I wouldn't say it's for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us a little more about deep brain stimulation? So this is a surgery in which something is inserted. And how large is that? And what does that do?
Yeah, so it's a little wire that is actually manufactured in vein, a little main connection. So it's a wire that gets implanted. So they drill a hole, two holes in the front of the skull, and it gets implanted into a deep structure of the brain that's involved in Parkinson's disease. It's involved in movement. And then the wire is under the skin and connected to basically a pacemaker in the chest wall. And then I have a tablet that can connect to that battery, and I can adjust settings. So I can kind of turn it up or down and make a number of adjustments in order to control people's tremor and their walking and their overall movement. So it doesn't address things like balance or sleep or mood or things like that, but it's a really excellent tool for their motor symptoms.
Mike, thanks for your call. We just have a tiny bit of time left. And Dr. Dodwell, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about medication-induced symptoms that mimic Parkinson's. Do we have time to talk about those?
Sure. I think just quickly, it is important to know that there are other causes of what we call Parkinsonism. So all of those symptoms we're talking about can be caused by Parkinson's disease, but they also can be a side effect of medication. And medications that are used sometimes for refractory depression, so they're in the antipsychotic class of medications, they can commonly cause symptoms that look like Parkinson's disease, but it's totally reversible. So if you were to stop the medication, those symptoms would gradually go away. So I think just to highlight the fact that there are other reasons why people might have these symptoms, so that's why it's important to get checked out.
All right. And Nancy, I know you wanted to talk about the New England Parkinson's Symposium, which will be next spring here in Maine. Is that something that will be open to the public?
Absolutely. It is open to anyone interested in Parkinson's disease. There is no fee or cost to attend. Sunday, April 12th. Dr. Dodwell, I know you've been working with my colleague, Stephanie, to help plan this event. It is really a highlight of our year. I hope everyone can attend. Call our helpline for more information.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for joining us today. The voice you just heard was Nancy Nealon, Education and Outreach Director, Northeast with the Parkinson's Foundation. Also with us for the hour, Dr. Sarah Dodwell, a neurologist and movement disorder specialist with Maine Health, and Joan Emerson from Biddeford, who lives with Parkinson's and has started a support group for others dealing with the disease. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.